Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special listen to The Prophets. No, I'm not going to explain what a period is to Bill. We're actually taking this little interlude to... Later. We're actually taking this little interlude to look at the newest incarnation in the Star Trek family, Star Trek Discovery. As we record this episode, four episodes of Discovery have aired, of which Bill and I have only seen four of them, but Paul has only seen two, so we'll try to remain relatively unspoiled for the latter two episodes. I, as ever, am Andrew Leyland, and I'm joined by the magnificent bastard that is Dr. Bill Robinson. Pew, pew.
Hey, everybody.
And the man who takes no shit, our Captain Lorca, Paul Spataro.
I thought I was the magnificent bastard.
You can both be magnificent bastards.
He doesn't even know who Lorca is yet because he hasn't seen the other two episodes.
That's very true. So what we need to do before we start off, Star Trek Discovery is the newest, as I say, incarnation of Star Trek. It is the, is it the sixth show overall, if we count the animated series, or the fifth?
But you got Star Trek the Animated Series, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, and this, so seventh.
So this is the seventh TV show to bear the name Star Trek. It's aroused the ire of a couple of fans by being set 10 years before the adventures of Captain Kirk, as displayed in the original series. So it's taking place roughly around the time that Captain Christopher Pike is captain of the Enterprise and Spock is taking up his first posting on that vessel. What seems to be the problem for a lot of people is that the look of the show does not in any way look like the original series. And that, I think that's the first thing that we want to discuss. What do you guys think about that? Does that bother you? Are you not bothered at all as long as the show's good? What's your opinion on this?
Well, you know, you gotta, I guess at some point you have to set your nerddom to the side and say, okay, do I really, I mean, it was cool when they did that in Enterprise that one time where they had the Defiant that came from the Mirror Universe, blah, 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 and all that. Mm. But, I mean, do we really want to see that now? I mean, I think it looks cool. I know some are going to say, oh, it's just like the Abrams verse, but actually this doesn't take place in the Abrams verse. From things that I've read, it takes place in the what they call the Prime Universe. It's not, excuse me, the Kelvin verse, not the Abrams verse. But I can let my nerddom go and just enjoy the look of the show for what it is. However, now that I just said that, when we talk about the Klingons, I'm going to go batshit crazy.
That does seem to have been the main point of contention, doesn't it? What did you think, Paul?
I don't really have a problem with the look of it. I do have some discomfort, I don't think as much as Bill, with the look of the Klingons, just because I didn't see the need to change them as dramatically as they did. But that said, the overall look of the show is fine. I think it looks sharp. I think it really, you know, the special effects from what I've seen so far look to be, you know, as good as anything you're going to see on TV. The issue I have is more the tone of the show, and it's really not an issue I have so much as an observation, but I think we'll get into that as we go on, because we're really just talking about the look. I think the look is fine. I'm interested, you know, this, it's kind of a dopey thing, but I'm interested in, like, knowing the progression of the uniforms here. Because it's, you know, they're not really derivative of the original series uniforms, but they're not really what we saw in Enterprise either. And so I'm always just kind of, I have some basic interest in that just because it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think all three of us are in roughly the same position though. There's a couple of instances where, particularly in the second episode, where the ships all show up to do battle and there isn't a single Constitution-class starship anywhere. And there's a little bit of me that was rankled by that, even if we'd just seen one in the background. It would have been nice to see a Constitution class. Mm. And there's little minor Trekkian nerds like, aren't there only supposed to be 12 starships patrolling the galaxy at this moment in time? Where are all these other ships from? And they seem to be sliding past that by saying, well, this is a science vessel and this is such and such a thing. And I don't know what I have to think about that. But overall, yeah, I'm willing to just go with it. I think the look of the show indicative of the time in which we currently live. It isn't 1966 anymore. It isn't 1966 anymore. Technology has moved on. The uniforms have to stand up to high definition. See, one of the things about watching the original show in high definition now, you can see the zipper on Kirk's arm. Hmm. So there's certain elements that obviously they've had to update. Would I have liked them to perhaps have the original series uniforms? I don't know.
I don't either.
They stood up perfectly well, like Bill just said, in that Enterprise episode. Scott Bakula looked particularly good in the green wraparound tunic that Captain Kirk used to wear. But whether or not that kind of design aesthetic would work now, I don't know. And certainly the tone of the show, which is what Paul just brought up, is very much, well, the fleet are at war. This is a different kind of Starfleet than we've ever seen before. I, given the amount of negative press the show received before it aired, I was quite impressed by how much money it looks like CBS have spent on this.
Yeah, this looks to be a very expensive series to put out. But I guess that the basis of that is they want to launch their streaming service, and you know, you got to put something out there if you want people to subscribe to it. If you start cutting corners there, I think people are going to say, well, why am I paying for this?
Yeah. So the look of the show, I don't think is our concern. The opening credit theme seems very Star Trekian. The score has seemed quite Star Trek in places. I'm not sure about the opening credit titles themselves, the drawings and the sketches of everything. But so far it looks okay. Discovery was something I was a little bit concerned about when I saw the drawings, because it is based on an original drawing of the Enterprise from the 60s.
From before Ralph McQuarrie. They then moved.
Was it Ralph McQuarrie?
I thought this one was based. Well, no, I thought this was based off of.
Was it a motion picture design?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
Okay. I know it was a design for an Enterprise at some point, and it didn't look good in the drawings, and it didn't look good in the sketches and the previs stuff that I saw. But on screen, it looks pretty damned impressive.
Mm-hmm. Which we'll actually see more of that one, Paul. You haven't really seen that yet. That comes after 1 and 2.
Mm. So Paul hasn't seen that.
Just a quick touch on the uniforms again. We do see a touch of an old-style uniform in a original series. Someone will be wearing a jumpsuit and will be gold in color.
All right.
You know what I'm talking about, right, Andy?
Is this the appearance of Harcourt Fenton Mudd?
No.
Oh. Oh, right, yes, sorry.
That are being transported on the shuttle, and then everybody's wearing the jumpers.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, from episode 3.
Yes.
Yes, I do know what you're talking about now. All right, okay, so we're all on board with the look of it. I think we were all on board with there being new Star Trek. We're at a point now where there hasn't been Star Trek on television in new episodes since 2003.
Wow, that
is that right?
I think that's right.
Yeah, so we're looking at well over 15 years without new episodic Star Trek.
God, I feel old.
The casting was interesting. Sonequa Martin-Green. A lot of information is coming out now that they perhaps didn't release before. People were always talking about the delays to the show. Ooh, this isn't a good thing. It turns out one of the delays was they wanted Sonequa Martin-Green for the role of Michael Burnham, who was tied up with The Walking Dead until the end of the season when her character got killed off.
So well, I heard... I'm sorry to interrupt you, Andy. I heard originally that they wanted Rosario Dawson and that she couldn't do it because of her Marvel contract.
Right. I'd not heard the Rosario Dawson rumor. Right.
And then when they couldn't get Rosario Dawson, that's when they changed courts and they went for her.
Right. I have not heard that. So that's interesting. The rest of the cast are mostly no names, or certainly I've never heard of them. If I have a look on IMDb, in order, Saru is Doug Jones. Is Doug Jones famous for playing aliens in stuff?
Well, he played Abe Sapien in Hellboy.
Right.
He only voiced him in the second one. He was the body of the Silver Surfer in the Fantastic Four movies.
Right, okay.
He was in Pan's Labyrinth. He was in, and I'm not looking at anything, I'm just remembering this. He was the character in Hocus Pocus, the like the boy that was had the like his mouth was sewed up. He was like a ghoul or something.
Did he sing the song?
I
Hocus Pocus Abracadabra.
No.
Oh, that wasn't him?
No, that wasn't him. But I like him as the alien. The aliens that are basically cows. They were bred for food.
Yeah, and they have hooves.
I love his just his attitude that he, you know, his natural instinct is to run from danger.
Yeah, he can detect danger, and you'll see, like, I don't know if it popped up in the first or second episode, but he has like little ganglia that like flare up on the back of his neck when he senses danger, and that's a plot point in the third and fourth episode that you'll pick up.
Yeah. And I suspect that will come in useful later as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're very definitely seeding the things that go later. The only other person on the cast I'd heard of was Hello to Jason Isaacs as Captain Gabriel Lorca.
It's funny, his part hasn't been very big so far.
No. I'm a mark for Jason Isaacs anyway. I don't think he's ever bad in anything he's been in. But he's also a very interesting interview. He knows his stuff. The guy is not only a big film fan, but he can quote episode titles and stuff of the original Star Trek. So this is a guy who is coming from an awareness, at the very least, of the fan base and what they're expecting from it. I don't want to give too much away because Paul's not seen him yet, but for me, he's very much like Mackenzie Calhoun. If you've read the Star Trek New Frontier books by Peter David, there is an element of Mackenzie Calhoun to the character of Gabriel Lorca. He's a guy who isn't necessarily an explorer, more of a soldier, who is perhaps in his element with Starfleet being at war. And just like Mackenzie Calhoun, he's very much one of those people who will listen to others' orders and nod politely at those orders and then go off and do whatever he wants anyway. So I think he's got potential to be one of the more interesting captains that we've seen in a Star Trek show. I just wish they hadn't saddled him with having to do an accent.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. I know Paul hasn't seen him yet, and I feel like we keep shutting Paul out.
That's all right. Don't worry about me. I'll catch up.
You'll catch up. Yeah, I was going to ask you, because he is English, correct?
Yep.
So what do you... His accent is kind of... I don't want to say weird, but it's like I can't even place like where he's supposed to be. I guess it's like a Midwest accent for America.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you guys, what accent is he doing? Because like you say, it's kind of American, but not. Is Gabriel Lorca perhaps
not
born in America, raised somewhere else? Or?
It's not East Coast, it's not West Coast, it's not a Southern, it's not a way Northern like Minnesota, or I think it's like a generic Midwest accent, but not heavily on like the country twang. It's got that tinge to it, but it's different. And maybe I'm just not used to seeing him. I don't think I've ever seen him play a role where he wasn't English or didn't have to have the accent. So it's kind of like,
I was a bit curious by that. For me, I don't mind actors doing accents or coming from other places from where they're actually from. That's the whole point of acting. But is there a reason that they've saddled him with an accent? There is, as far as I can see, there is no reason he couldn't have just had his normal accent in this, given that Starfleet is United Earth. Because it is one of those things, it's like Hugh Laurie. I know Hugh Laurie's had great success in House, but whenever I see Hugh Laurie do an American accent, it just seems wrong. Because I grew up with him in Blackadder and all of that stuff, where he doesn't have the American accent. And it just seems to me, it's a curious decision to give him an American accent, or whatever the hell accent it is that he's doing, if it doesn't have any bearing on the character.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But I mean, performance-wise, no problems with him so far.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we'll just go back and talk about the first two. Now, my understanding from something that we talked about on Listen to the Prophet is that in America, you guys only got the first episode, didn't you?
Yes.
So the second episode you didn't get for free on CBS, which I think was the worst mistake they've made in this rolling out on CBS All Access. I think they should have shown you all 80 minutes of that pilot as a two-hour movie. Because when you watch it, that's clearly what it's structured as. That is not structured as two individual episodes. Even two episodes that are to be continued, that is clearly structured as a show that should have been seen as one whole pilot show. And it's probably not giving anything away to Paul to say that that is essentially not the show that you get from episode three onwards. The pilot is all backstory.
Right.
What did you think once you'd seen part two? Did that change your opinion of part one?
Not particularly, honestly. I do agree with you that you needed the whole show because it just felt incomplete. But I think what they wanted to do was end on a cliffhanger so that you'd say, now I got to get the streaming service to see the next part. Mm. So I think that was their logic in it. But, I enjoyed the second episode. I enjoyed the first episode. But I don't know that it, you know, changed my opinion in any way. I think that, like, what I was going to say about the tone of the show, from what I can pick up, you shut up, dog. From what I can pick up on the show, it seems like the tone is going to be something that I'm going to use. I hope I'm not going to insult him with this, but I'm going to use our friend Scott Gardner as my example. I don't think this is what Scott wants from Star Trek, because it's not going to be the science fiction exploration. Hey, here's a unique science fiction concept that we're coming across, and what are we going to do about it? You know, we're explorers. It looks like it's going to be more of what we get in DS9 a little bit, you know, a continued storyline with space battles and politics and, you know, a little bit of space opera, which I know, you know, that's appreciated in the Star Wars universe and not everybody appreciates it in the Star Trek universe. So that's what I was getting at with the tone of the show. I happen to enjoy that equally. Neither one is exclusive of the other to me. So I'm fine with it if that's the tone of the show, but I think some of the more old school Star Trek fans are not going to really go for this. I don't know that they're trying to play this for the old school fans, though.
No, I think they're very definitely aiming it at the audience of today. That's what I said earlier on about it not being 66 anymore and not being 96 anymore. Battlestar Galactica changed television science fiction. Just dropped dead, altered television science fiction forever. They made a science fiction series there with Battlestar Galactica, which was kind of written off as a slightly campy, not too serious, 70s melodrama ripping off Star Wars. I love the original Battlestar Galactica, but that's not an unfair criticism. And they made it into a post 9/11, 21st century science fiction allegory look at where we were as people in the early part of the 21st century and turned it into one of the most riveting, character driven pieces of television science fiction ever made. And for better or worse, Galactica has influenced every science fiction series that has followed. And this very much seems to be taking that Galactica idea of updating it very much for where we are and where we live now and the problems that we're facing now as society and updating that and put it into the Star Trek world. I don't have a problem with that per se, because I think anything has to evolve to survive. And it's a very tough television landscape at the minute. We're in an era now where there are just so many genre shows and we can't keep up with them all.
No.
So if they want to command my attention for an hour of time every week, just putting the name Star Trek on it isn't cutting it. It didn't work with Voyager. It didn't work with Enterprise at the beginning, although I did later learn to respect and appreciate what Enterprise was doing. And so far, I am chomping at the bit for the next episode. So they've done their job in getting me interested. The question, is it Star Trek, is probably a very interesting one. And I think you only get your answer to that with the fourth episode.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, TV, you know, this is, it's all about who has the money in the general public. It's a demographic. And face it, Star Trek fans, we're all getting older. And we're aging out of our demographic, the target demographic for advertisers for money. You know, so you can whine all you want about, well, you know, this isn't my Star Trek. And you just have to understand they're not making it for us anymore. They're making it for the younger people. Hey, I'm old.
They're making it for me. I'm into the space opera. Well, I have no problem.
Well, not everybody is fluid in their watching habits, as I believe the three of us are, because I enjoy formulaic shows from the 70s and 80s.
Me too.
And the stuff that I see now. But other people, like, you know, shows nowadays, you pretty much have to get in at the beginning, or it's kind of hard to catch up. Or you just have to have somebody, okay, can you explain to me what happened in the last five or, you know, the last season? That's why I was, when my daughters were watching Supernatural, and I was interested in it. I saw the formula, but I didn't know the players. So eventually at one point I had to go back and watch all 12 seasons.
Yeah.
To figure out, all right, now I know when so-and-so pops up, who the hell this person is and what's going on. And that's the way TV is nowadays, and that's you know, that's, there are still some shows that do have the formula, like my wife watches, wife or daughter, they watch Hawaii Five-O. That's got a formula. I see it, but it also has an overarching story. So that's, you know, there are shows like that that have combined that and are doing well. And getting back to Star Trek, we got the backstory in the first two, the next two kind of tell, you know, have its own chunk of getting things set up. And then you're right, Andy, by the end of four, I kind of see, and you and I had talked about this, that, you know, there's things that I see, and Paul will probably see it too, just by the way an actor gives a look, by something that's happening on the screen, that, okay, I see where this is going to go. And there's like technologies that are being introduced in the third and fourth episode that hardcore Trek fans are going to be like, well, now that they don't have that in the original series, and they don't have that here. Well, why is this here? I've already figured out just by a look on a character's face in four how that technology is going to go away.
Yeah.
So you have too, Andy, right?
Yep.
Okay. And Paul will too when he sees it.
Maybe, but I'm kind of...
No. Because I'm like, I know exactly what's going to happen here. And blah, blah, blah. So it's like, yeah. Or at least I'm pretty darn sure what's going to happen. So I'm getting into the show as well. So I don't have any big complaints with it. Except Klingons.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Why don't we hit on that?
Yeah. Why don't we talk about the Klingon in the room?
All right.
You know what? Hold on. Andy, what do you think of the Klingons? Because I think Bill's going to rant. So let's let Bill go last.
I'll be brutally honest with you. When they first appear on screen, those are Klingons. But I suppose you've got to think back to 1979 when Star Trek the Motion Picture came out, and we all had exactly the same reaction. Those are Klingons. It seems a bit more drastic now, because let's be honest, in 1979 we'd seen the Klingons, what, four times in episodes in the original show, and that was it. And Roddenberry was very, that's what they always look like, we just didn't have the money to show it, was his excuse. We eventually got a reason for it in an episode of Enterprise. I can honestly say I was never chomping at the bit for a reason why the Klingons look differently. You just accept it.
I preferred Worf's explanation of, we don't like to talk about it.
Yeah, we just don't talk about it. Yeah, there was nothing wrong with that. That was a perfect explanation. My issue with the new Klingons is they're constantly talking in Klingon. And they're covered in 6 inches of latex. They've got those ridiculous teeth in, so they can't really talk properly anyway. And they're speaking a made-up language. And I really think that the main misstep with the show for me with the Klingons was they should have come in on them in the first scene, speaking Klingon. You pan round the back of them, exactly the same in The Hunt for Red October. And when you pan back round, they're speaking in English. And from that point on, you accept that they're speaking Klingon, but for the actor's ease, they're speaking English, so we understand it as well. That's my main misstep with it. I don't have a problem too much with them depicting them as that different, because if you look at them, they do basically follow the same facial structure as Worf, basically. It is all still there. It's just, you know...
I'm not going to go on my rant yet, but yeah, talking about the facial structure, we just peeked behind the curtain. We just recorded the Sons of Moog episode for Deep Space Nine, and while I was watching that, because I had seen Discovery and then was rewatching this, and I paid a much more closer attention to probably than I have ever done before to the Klingon makeup effects in Deep Space Nine, and particularly looking at like Worf's nose, and I'm like, oh, he does have like a double nostril there, like a ridge I didn't notice before. Oh, he does have ridges going across his nose, just like the Klingons in Discovery do. And then I was thinking, well, you know what? If they shave all his hair off, he'll probably look just like the Klingons in Discovery too. So you're right. It's really not that far. But then I'm going to pull back away now before I get to my super rant.
No, do your rant. That's what we're here for.
Well, okay, let me just hit on my thoughts before you rant.
All right, go.
Just really quickly, I just didn't see the need for the change. I thought the makeup effects as they went in the Star Trek The Motion Picture, and then, you know, as they developed them through TNG, I thought it was fine. They gave us an explanation we really didn't need in Enterprise, but it's fine too. They gave us an explanation for why they look different in the original series. They could have just gone with the original, you know, the new look that they developed over the years and kind of played with that. And you could have even had this offshoot where they looked like on the original series. I'm sure they didn't want to get into that and start explaining that away. But well, you have the different houses.
They would have both. They would have both at this time.
Yeah, and that would have been fine with me. I really don't see the need for this. That's my biggest criticism of the look. It just does. It seems like it's an unnecessary step that they took in the evolution of the appearance. I totally agree with Andy on the language part of it, because it is distracting to have to read subtitles throughout it. It keeps you from looking at the actors and what they're doing. So that's it. I'm done. Bill, rant away, baby.
All right. Well, first I have to stuff this paper towel in my mouth. Okay, hold on.
You gotta gargle some marbles for us.
As long as we got subtitles, we're good.
Okay.
Subtitles don't work on a podcast, Bill.
Well, what I said was blah 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 to kuvma. Okay, because that's about the only new word I've learned is to kuvma,
and that's a name.
And that's a name. That's a proper noun. Let me, you know, I used the paper towel because I couldn't find marbles to stuff in my mouth to do the new Klingon. And, you know, maybe it's just because it's way too much makeup. So what I'm hoping, okay, this is just a big swerve, a big way to just, you know, stick it to the fans that are been out of shape about this, and that what they'll do is we're going to find we actually in this time frame have three types of Klingons, because they're talking about the 24 houses, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it could be that like these guys we're seeing are like the pure blood Klingons. And then you've got we'll have the original series Klingons who were from the, because we saw in Enterprise, it was the genetic experiments with three types of Klingons, and this is just a big trick to, you know, tweet the fans. But yeah, man, they got a lot of makeup, just a lot. Like, I don't know why they had to make them so different. I mean,
go
ahead.
Is it just the advances in makeup? Because if you watch Star Trek The Next Generation in high definition, you can clearly see the makeup joins. And it's the same in Deep Space Nine, which isn't in high definition, but is being broadcast in better quality now on Netflix and so on and so forth than it has ever been seen before. And I wonder if it isn't just a change just to piss people off. I wonder if it is just a change in not only makeup advancements, but also filming technique advancements. If everything's been shot in HD now, the makeup has to be so much better than it used to be.
True.
And I wonder if that's a part of it as well. I don't know. I mean, I'm not defending the change for the sake of change, but I don't think they've done that. I think there has to be a reason, either an in-story or a practical reason for what they've done.
Okay. All right. Look at Doug Jones, though. All right.
Yes.
Doug Jones is a slender individual. You know, they've got, like, the headpiece on him and everything.
He looks like the guy from the animated series to me.
He directs. He does. Yeah.
Yes. But he still has a relatively human-sized head. When the Klingons turn and are in profile, their freaking nose, like, it goes from their mouth and their nose is like, there's no nose anymore. It's all forehead. It's from the bottom of the lip straight up around the top of their head. There is no, like, cranial ridge. It's just one big massive... I mean, it's huge. He's got a huge head. I mean, it's like wow. I don't think it needed to be that drastic. I could have dealt with bald Klingons. We had General Chang in Star Trek VI. That's fine. But I'm just like, wow. Now, their armors is kind of interesting, but that could be ceremonial. You know, it's not the regular leather. Oh, we do see some other people... Like, I don't know if that's their space armor, like their spacesuit slash, like, it's like a combined thing. Because we do, I don't know if we see that in 3 or to where it, like, retracts into the armor. If that's in episode 3 or 4. But it's I guess that's it for the Klingon rant. I mean, it's just like, I mean, yeah, I understand you want to put your own stamp on it, but, all right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't seem to have the problem with the Klingons that everybody else did, but we'll see.
Yeah,
I want to see where they go with them, too. You know, that's going to be a factor. Yeah. Like you said, maybe they will have different offshoots, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, they've worked it into the continuity, it's cool. That's probably my biggest problem. It's just that, to some extent, I'm a slave to continuity. So they already had the two different looks, and they've explained how they had the two different looks, and it's kind of like, I'm okay with that. So, why do we need to come up with a third look?
Well, and one of the things that has been criticized of the show is how slick and fast-paced it is. But if you look at the original Star Trek and compare it to other shows of that vintage, the original show was slick and fast-paced at the time that it was made. Excuse me. So I don't see that as a legitimate criticism. What do we think of the story, then?
Well, all right, the opening scene... where they're on the planet and they reprime the well so that race of people, you know, they're trying to avoid the Prime Directive. They don't want to be seen, which they broke that because the other people saw them. But anyway, nerd alert. and this is going to be another nerd alert. Okay. The way they're cut off with communications from the ship, so the way that they can be, and I'm sure other people in other podcasts have already brought this up, but I'll bring it up anyway. The way that they're spotted by the ship in orbit or whatever is that the captain takes the first officer and they walk around in she's walking on a path, they're turning, do all this and that, and you come to find out she walked them around to make the shape of a chevron in the sand. So that the ship could spot it from orbit. I don't think so. I think that was kind of windy on that planet. I think a lot of them footsteps would have been blown away. And then when the ship comes out and comes down and picks them up, wouldn't that have blown away that whole chevron before they could see it? It's cool. I get it.
I kind of took it as not that they're flying along and they see that, because that's just ridiculous. I took it as maybe there was a pattern of moving living beings and that somehow that pattern showed up on their computer system and they said, oh, look at that. Okay, that's where we got to go.
Oh, you know what? I like that. I like that a lot better. I had not thought of that. Yeah, okay. All right. I could go with that. Like, it could have been tracking them and, look, they walked
in. But, there may have been, I assume there were other living beings on that planet and they didn't know where to focus in. But then what was created with that, clued them in. That's the way I took it, because that's the only way that actually made sense to me.
Well, what did you think of the captain?
Georgiou.
Yeah.
I thought she was brilliant. I thought they did an excellent job in that two-part opener of creating a very Kirk Spock McCoy dynamic between Michael, Georgiou and Saru without it replicating the Kirk Spock dynamic. And McCoy, sorry, dynamic of the original. They did a good job of giving the three of them a different point of view to allow them to bat off each other, but it still felt fresh and unique rather than replication.
Yeah, because Burnham and Georgiou? No, is that which one's
Georgiou's the captain, Saru is the first officer.
I like the fact that she seems to be a new character and doesn't just seem derivative of past characters that we've seen. Mm-hmm. She's got a very, very much of a mentor type attitude, but while being the captain at the same time and being no nonsense. I also like, and I'm sorry to change course here, but I also like the fact there are ramifications for not listening to your captain.
Yeah, yeah. I liked that as well.
There's too way, way too many times, and we've talked about it on Profits, way too many times that people just go say, oh, you know what? You gave me an order, but I disagree. I think this is better, so this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Nope, you had consequences, and we put your ass in the brig.
Major consequences.
Oh, yeah, yes. Including beyond that, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think of the fact that Michael has a connection to Spock through Sarek?
No problem for me. It's fine. Right. You know, we really don't know. We don't know Spock's history. You know, there's been a lot of mystery to that all along, and I don't want them to totally. You know, I don't want to show young Spock, but I don't mind the fact that there's aspects of his life that we don't know. We know even less about Sarek's past. So I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it from the point of view of the original show again, which this is a prequel to, all we know about Sarek is from one episode, and that's that he wasn't speaking to Spock for ages. And that's it. Whatever the external...
But now, wait a minute. Whoa. I hadn't even thought of that. Didn't he not speak to Spock because of his decision to go into Starfleet and that whole thing is finally resolved in...
Yes.
So here he's all buddy-buddy with Burnham.
Burnham's not a Vulcan.
But still,
she went through the Vulcan Academy, right?
Yeah.
Which Spock didn't.
He's doing like a long-distance mind meld that I'm...
I thought that was a bit silly. I will say that. I thought the long-distance mind meld was a little bit...
Which puts a strain on him, which I'm wondering in the future doesn't cause his disease that he gets that makes him go nutso on the next gen, where Picard has to take his emotions so that Sarah can function. You know, he actually has brain damage from trying to talk to Burnham long distance.
Well, it's interesting you mention you don't want to see young Spock. Apparently the first novel that has been published, and the novels to Discovery are apparently being considered canon, because all of the ideas for the novel came from the producers, writers, etc. Is Michael and Spock's relationship 10 years prior to Discovery. So presumably Spock's about 15 in that.
As long as there's no romance.
There's really no need for that.
No, I don't. I think the novels are going to be left with tidying up the continuity issues. But that's what they've always done, isn't it?
Mm. Oh, they've tidied them up and they've muddied them up sometimes. Yeah. Depending on which ones you're reading.
Yeah. But on the whole, I was very impressed by the first two episodes, and I've continued to be impressed by the two subsequent episodes. I do like the relationship between Lorca going into 3 and 4 slightly and the rest of his crew, because he's been given command of a science vessel.
Yeah, and he kind of rankles at that.
Yeah, and he doesn't really like that too much. That's been an interesting dynamic. And how Michael ends up on that ship is interesting, which we won't say because Paul has yet to watch those episodes. But for the most part, I'm just happy to have Star Trek back on television again. And we've got two Star Trek shows on at the same time, so that's good.
We
have two. The Orville is Star Trek, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's worth spending just a couple of quick minutes on that, too, because I think the contrast between what I've seen with Discovery and what I've seen on the Orville is dramatic. Discovery...
Sorry, go ahead.
From what I've observed, Discovery is, let's update Star Trek, let's go with, you know, the current sensibilities, let's try and do a big budget TV show that's going to really just capture people. The Orville is more of an homage to the original Trek or to TNG, and trying to kind of build on what we had in those, much in the way that Galaxy Quest did. So I think they're two very, very different shows, but from what I've seen, and frankly, at this point, I've seen two episodes of each show, I enjoy both of them equally in very, very different ways.
Yeah, I do too. I'm surprised by how much I'm enjoying the Orville. But just last week, I had occasion, I watched an episode of the original Star Trek, Mirror, Mirror, and I watched an episode of The Next Generation, Lower Decks, and they're two completely different shows. The Mirror Mirror is a fast-paced, slick, 50-minute science fiction adventure show, heavy on plot, where they introduce a situation and how to get out of it. A deep science fiction idea is in that episode that wasn't as well-known as it is nowadays, and they still have room for character, action, drama, and humour. Lower Decks is all character, a much slower-paced, and feels like a different show to the original Star Trek, and I think that's what we've got with Discovery and the Orville. They're two completely different science fiction shows that are both taking their cues from Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think either one of them is invalid. I do think, like you just said, Paul, Discovery is filtered through modern sensibilities and that we live in a post-Battlestar Galactica world. And the Orville wants very much it to be 1996 again, and he wants to make The Next Generation. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. No, not at all. I think they're both very enjoyable.
Yeah. So I like that we've got two space opera shows on the air at the same time.
So you guys have, well, obviously you have it, Paul, but Andy, have you seen the latest one of the Orville?
No, I've seen four Orvilles.
Where they, oh, okay, because where they find out that Bortus, this doesn't really give anything, Bortus, they can, one of the guys has sushi on his plate, and there's a ball of wasabi. So Bortus grabs the ball of wasabi and he just eats it, and they're all like, oh no, oh my god, oh my god, and he's just like sitting there like, what? And and he's like, we have a very, you know, tough digestive system because we are, you know, the planet is so harsh. So they're like, so you can eat anything? And he's like, pretty much. And they're like, here, eat this glass. Here, eat this cactus plant. And then, like, the one guy goes, hold on, I'm going to go get a bag of nails. And they're like, all senior crew to the bridge.
I kind of like the fact that Orville seems to meld comedy and the sensibilities of Star Trek together. Now, some people might be offended by that. Again, we may have some people who just find that to
different.
Be bothersome.
It's something different.
Yeah, you know, I'm good with it.
The same, no, I'm not slamming you. I'm just saying it's nice to see something different for a change. That it's like, it just of the, well, I hate to say it, formulaic sci-fi show. It's like, okay, we've got our formulaic show, we've got a dash of, you know, we've got the formula, we've got a little bit of Battlestar with the ongoing storyline, and hey, we got comedy this time too. You know, it's a nice, it's something new.
Yeah, it's like,
if it's recycled,
nice to have,
from three different things. You know?
Yeah, it's nice to have two different space operas on at the same time, and so completely different in tone from each other. And nobody ever complains that there are more than one Doctor or Lawyer show on at the same time.
My God, if you're a Law and Order fan.
Yeah, Law and Order, yeah.
Jeez.
So, anyway, that was quite brief, because we are up against a time crunch. Paul has to go.
I have to go.
Thank you very much. For joining us on our Listen to the Prophets special on Star Trek Discovery. I think we may do another one of these or another couple of them after we've seen more episodes and see what we think. Maybe when it goes on its season break at the end of November, let's have a look at how the first half of the first season developed.
I think that would be perfect.
Yeah, this is just going up as an extra episode, so there is no next time per se. But thank you very much, as usual, to Paul and Bill for getting up at stupid o'clock to record this. I am happily enjoying the middle of the day, so it's great for me. Hope you enjoyed it. Please do email in what your thoughts on Star Trek Discovery are. We are interested in hearing what you think of it. And we'll see you all next time. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Oh, look, a Tribble.
And a Gorn skeleton.
Shh! He hasn't seen that episode yet.
Oh, sorry.
Well, it's a spoiler now, Paul. Sorry.
That's all right. You know what? I need to get some sort of like flu or something so I could be home for like 4 days and just watch these shows.
And just catch up, right?
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine Podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.